Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around the iPhone and the Android device. Another episode of...
Wow.
And listen to that... This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest and Shelly and Dr. Bruce.
Hey, guys.
Hi, guys.
Hey, welcome.
Hello. That was like the shadow.
It was a very extra special, intro.
Fender amp vibraverb.
So Bruce and I do weekly infusion. Dr. Bruce, he's internist, ER doctor, addictionologist over at Kaiser. Yeah. Then do you have a website right now you want to promote or anything?
I need something to promote.
Okay, good.
Let's write a book.
Let's go to Shelly then.
Yes, let's write a book. Hi.
Hey there.
How's it going?
Good.
It's good to be back.
Good to see you.
It's good to see you.
And so you
I miss you.
I know, Shelly. It only feels like 5 minutes goes by between the times we see you.
It's exciting.
Uh-oh. Somebody's going to adjust your mic there.
Okay.
There you go.
And right. Tell us about where you're working.
Okay. So I'm at Bel Air Treatment, and it's an outpatient adult, 18 to, 30-ish. We're doing... three tracks. We have morning, afternoon, and the evening track.
Wow.
So we're there 15 hours a day. And so we're there, and then we were able to expand, fortunately we're able to expand into another center, which is in West Hollywood on Melrose, which is a lovely location. And that's called Core. And then out of Core, we also opened Pride, which is an LGBTQ program.
Right.
It's very trauma-informed and very very forward and progressive in treatment of substance abuse in addition to substance abuse with special populations.
Interesting.
And so we're going strong there. Pride is amazing.
Too, right?
of a detox in Encino.
Well, how do we do?
Shelly's
does
running
this sound
it.
Like
she's running it. Drew,
are you the clinical director for all that?
No.
Okay.
No.
Good.
I am the clinical. I'm the program director for the detox and for the Bel Air treatment.
Yeah.
Which is our in-network outpatient program.
Insurance covers it,
but we went in-network, which is really exciting because the in-network gives us so much more opportunity to have the HMOs come in and the EPOs and people who don't have the bigger insurance policies.
Do they restrict what you're able to do?
They don't really.
Weird.
I know. We're really able to provide services that are just so fantastic.
The three of us are used to highly restrictive insurance companies. So in other words, if you go to insurance care and you say, we need to give more care, they'll let you give more care?
Yes.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean,
it's because they trust
just,
you guys. Or
I think it's because I've been on the front lines of that. I think it's because they were going bust paying out of network fees, and they're happy that people
happy.
Are going in network.
They might be. Yeah, they
so
might
is it
be
day
happy.
Treat? Is it like a
it's
day treatment?
Day treatment, yeah. So but it's 3 hours.
5 days a week, 7 days a week.
5 days a week, 3 hours, and we have three different tracks to offer. The additional track with the evening program has been so great because people are now progressing, getting jobs. They're moving
right.
on with their lives, and they're able to still stay in contact
with
their treatment.
Are they living independently?
They're
they
beginning
starting
to
get out
to
on
live,
their own?
Absolutely. They're living independently. They're moving forward. They're coming in the evening, and they're able to continue treatment while they're able to function and develop, going to school or developing their careers or going back to work or taking care of, their families or whatever they need to do. And they're able to still come in and have that tether to treatment.
Are a lot of them in sober livings? Or
a lot of them are in sober livings. And now, with the evening track, it's really interesting because, I'm getting people who I'm like, okay, give me a plan. What do you want to do? You want to, go to work? You want to come in? Let's work with you. And we're also able to step them down to OP, which is just 2 days a week.
Are you surprised what you can get done with such limited participation?
You got to tool down. You can't have limousines and fancy food anymore.
I think we definitely had to budget more.
No, but I mean, are you surprised with how much you get done with the patients?
Oh, with the patients?
We're used to having full control all the time, and seeing them in over intensive environments. Are you surprised?
It's just an interesting take on treatment.
But
how's
let
that?
But wait.
I want to hear this. But like, what's that mean?
Interesting take, because where you have biopsychosocial issues,
yeah,
in outpatient, you didn't necessarily have them when you were working with people inpatient or more hours a day. They're out in the world and they're experiencing, they're coming back, and we're developing coping strategies. We're developing
and the 3 hours a day, it's in group, right?
Group, individual. And so we offer individual therapy, psychodynamic.
So my question
DBT,
was, CBT. In addition to the 3 hours, mm-hmm. they're also seeing a therapist, or that's part of the three
hours?
No,
that's the part of the 3 hours.
And how long is it, a length of a program, or is it tailored to?
It's based on participation. It's based on their own policies, and then it's based on like what we can do for them. We tend to really help people out who are highly motivated.
Of course.
But are they staying a month or 2 months or
5 months sometimes?
Yeah,
what do you want to say, Bob? You want to say something?
Well, it's really important to understand that they were the most forward thinking in Southern California.
Bel Air.
Her partner, Paul, told me a year ago, unless you go in network, you're really not serving the community. And no one wanted to go in network because we were fearful of what you just said. We're going to go in network for 500 a day or 250 a day. They're going to dictate to us what we got to do. The market believes you're supposed to live in a fancy house and get free food now.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. True.
And I wanted it to go back to the way that it was.
The basics.
Yeah, back
Explain
to the basics.
In network.
But I didn't want to be the – I was too chicken shit to be the one to do it before everything changed.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So
and Paul did it before everything changed, and it's very admirable.
Well, describe what in network means. Yeah. You sign up with an insurance
company.
We
agree, we have a contract with Blue Cross,
yeah,
or Blue Shield or Aetna, whereas their out of network pays me 3 or 4 times as much as that in network.
But usually it's highly restrictive in terms of how long you can keep that patient.
Yeah, but you're fighting. That's why it became the internet wars.
Right.
You've got to get volumes of patients at these high profit or these high costs. And I believe it's why the insurance. So they're the first ones to do it. Bel Air's the first ones I saw do it.
It's great.
And everyone else is going to fall in line.
Is the Affordable Care Act and whatever is happening?
I was going to ask about Medicaid, Medi-Cal.
California Care. Is that you involved
with
that
not,
stuff?
Yeah, we definitely have the in-network Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and Anthem. But Medi-Cal, no.
There
so,
are
so
people Medi-Cal going after that, though.
Is still not something in our wheelhouse, but it is something that
I don't see how you could do
is,
that. It just,
it's 110 a day.
You know, I'm not exactly.
But the amount of paperwork required for that is just ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm not sure on the federal funding level that, you know, we would have to do a lot of regrouping.
Yeah.
But we're CARF accredited and JCO accredited, which means that's we're the only company.
They're just the
we're
real
the
deal.
Only company.
And I wanted
that's
you
CARF
to know
and JCO.
That.
I'm loving it. I'm loving everything I'm hearing.
No, but that's ethics above just being a good treatment center.
But here's what's happened to me lately is I've
you don't trust the insurance companies.
No,
that's
no.
That's one thing.
I've gotten a weirdly even since we were left sitting on this couch, you and I. What's the word? I guess impatient or disdainful of some of the stuff you and I argue about, Bruce, which is, you know, the sort of medical management of addicts and the replacements and stuff like that. Why the hell? Now, let me back into this conversation this way. I'm imagining as a contingency of participation in your program, you require people to have a sponsor and do 12-step. Is that true?
I require them to be involved in some kind of
or
social
recovery or something.
Yeah, socially.
Some self-help, some mutual aid society.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yes.
Why the F are we not marketing the fact that mutual aid societies work, that have the highest probability of success as any medical management?
Well, but we saw that
in
New Jersey.
And are free.
But we saw that in New Jersey, and it's still
I know,
it's
but
a
it's,
little weird.
I know it is, but I don't mind a medical manager.
Shelley wasn't there, so explain. They were professionalizing sponsorship role. Mm-hmm. It was this weird company. It's a great guy named Mike. Mm-hmm. I've been talking to him ongoing since then. Mm-hmm. But basically, it was called Sober Coaching that mm-hmm. Governor Christie got all interested in.
It was an okay
New
idea.
Jersey? Okay.
Yeah, it was an okay idea.
And so
idea.
If you
OD'd, well, it was New Jersey.
Yeah, New Jersey.
If you OD'd in New Jersey, you got to sign this government work compensated coach.
Essentially was a, like a
it was like a sponsor.
It was like a sponsor, okay. But his goal was to enroll you in some sort of mutual aid society, preferably 12 step.
Yeah. Right.
And that was like, okay.
But that was weird though.
It was weird, but okay. It's like but it's again,
Drew did that face when they first grasped hold of what it was and he was like
Okay. Well, what happened with it? Are they still doing it?
No, or? It fell, apart for the medically managed. Once Christie got to Washington, D.C., it's all medically managed care. I mean, that's where they're going.
Replacement
therapy.
And so...
No reason for a coach. Do you think you need a coach?
I think... Okay, so I do a lot of Suboxone because I have to. I have probably 70 people on it right now. But it doesn't
work. Wait a minute.
Work.
You're supposed to have 250. What's the matter with you? You're way behind,
fortunately,
dude.
I'm in a system, a great system of master's level people, and we work with community groups. But I
the
tell
point is you couldn't manage 250. No physician can. No, that's an insane idea.
Unless all that's all you do.
Unless you had a sober coach.
No sober coach. But I require absolute participation in 12-step, and I tell patients, you can't just get this pill for me unless you're working a program. You get drug tested randomly.
But doesn't that pollute the waters of what being sober is?
No, because we'll have a disagreement on this. But I mean, for the relapsing young heroin addict, I think Suboxone is just a bridge to get some stability.
I don't think they're addicts. I'll make a dramatic statement. I don't think they're addicts.
There is a group that are not.
Let me just explain. Last week I looked up, because I started using heroin on a daily basis. It came out, something I read on the internet, in 1985. It piqued my curiosity.
Somebody else documented.
Where I was. So 1985, I became a daily user intravenously of heroin. So I looked up in 1985 what the estimate of heroin addicts or opiate addicts in America was that year.
How many?
558,000.
Wow.
There are 20 million opiate addicts in America estimated in 2017. So we've got to do something. We need Suboxone. We need sober coaching.
Yeah.
We need everything. Yeah. We shouldn't be picking and choosing which is better.
I absolutely agree.
Need a toolkit.
Doesn't that blow your mind?
No, it does not.
20 million people addicted to drugs?
Do you know that I found footage of... You know when Heath Ledger died? What was that, 2001?
That was a long time ago.
Okay. I found footage of me on Larry King going, you don't understand what's coming. You don't understand it. This is the first you're interested in. This is, and I use the word, it's a tsunami that's going to roll over this country. I said I have 20 years of experience with this. We've been seeing this coming, and I'm telling you, it's here.
It's happening.
It's happening.
So now what do we do about it, Bruce?
That was 17 years ago. 17 years ago.
We have to throw everything at it. It does not matter.
But the fact that free services are being disdained, free services that have the highest probability of sustaining an abstinence, it's just ridiculous.
But that's
I'm a big proponent of 12-stepping.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I am a huge proponent
of
it.
Of course.
But
millennials don't like it.
Well, it's not for everyone.
Correct.
Because some of the conceptualizations, from my perspective, are not where some 20-year-olds are. They can't develop quick enough to beat the clock for the overdoses.
Agreed.
That's the
thing I
think Suboxone fills in that gap so that we can keep them alive.
Yes, I grant that.
Okay,
but that's what he's saying, he wants to engage them in the meantime, and I don't have a problem with that.
No, we can engage them.
When I present it to my patients, I say, because there's all these questions about 12-step, I say, look, let me cut to the chase. I'm dealing with a lizard brain, your amygdala or your hippocampus, whatever you want to look at. That's the part that needs to change, and it takes 12 to 18 months. And the way I can recommend 12-step is it provides a structure. And they said, if you want to quit 12-step after 12 to 18 months, we'll talk about it then. But it's going to save your life. The Suboxone's not going to save your life. That's and my team, everybody's on the same page.
I wish there was a Suboxone AA because I'm in AA.
Me too.
And that, to me, I don't like people lying because their doctors told them, don't tell people what you're on.
Oh, boy.
You're telling people to lie in an,
he's not
in
saying,
an organ.
He's not
no,
no,
no. The
we
doctors.
Do need, the, we need.
We need some
need
sort of Suboxone version of it.
We need that to be transparent because when you get into some dishonesty around
anything,
what medications you're taking, you can't fully engage.
Yeah,
right. But there's a cognitive dissonance, a craziness going on right now. And it seems like when Trump got elected, polarization, when Suboxone and medication assisted treatment has been polarized. I have people in sober livings taking my patients off of Suboxone.
Of course.
I have patients, more and more residential.
That's the danger of putting the Suboxone population in with the truly abstinent population. That's exactly why not.
But if it's a medication, I'm a physician. If somebody has hypertension, I have them on a certain medication. Another patient would be contraindicated, and they don't.
It's none of their business to take people on or off of anything.
That's
up to the physician.
One other question. Residential treatment, I'm having more and more problem placing patients because the residential treatment will say, we don't take anybody on Suboxone. So
they're going to change that tune as soon as they face bankruptcy.
But what's wrong with having abstinence-only programs?
And harm reduction programs.
Sure.
That's what I'm saying, by side. Here's an interesting thing. Not many people know this. Dr. Drew, 25 years ago, you and I were hanging out, and I was shocked when you said that you prescribed benzos to some of your patients, because I always knew you as the addiction guy, right?
Yeah.
So would you recommend back then, when you're prescribing benzos to an alcoholic woman, to go to AA and that would help her? Because that's basically the same premise.
I don't prescribe benzos. I don't know what you're talking about.
You told me that you'd prescribe benzos in your private practice sometimes it's appropriate.
Addicts.
For detox.
For detox and
rarely. No, an ongoing for when it's appropriate for some of the women around San Marino.
Not addicts.
Yeah.
Oh,
but
yeah,
how
yeah.
do you determine?
I'm pretty good at telling when somebody's an addict or not. I'm pretty good at that.
Let's hope.
But there are like, for instance, a very common population is elderly patients. As people get very old, they can become... They can unravel. Their brain is less able to... This is what I was talking about. I remember this conversation.
Okay.
The brain is less able to sort of bridle itself, and they're just overwhelmed all the time. As one of my friends called it, they're spilkus all the time. They're always like...
We had this discussion I remember where we had this discussion on Loveline,
yeah.
and I was sober at the
yeah.
time. Shocked that Dr.
Yeah.
Drew prescribed benzos.
Yeah.
He's
and
the
this
devil.
Is like, we're talking about 80, you know... And boy, there's a huge
risk. We're not talking about anyone you know.
And there's a huge risk in this population, too, because they can fall, they can get mm-hmm. confused, they can have worsening cognitive dysfunction. But there's a certain sweet spot when you can use a little bit of Klonopin and it keeps them kind of glued together for a while. You want to get them off it as they get older, but you use a little bit of that for a while and a non addict is like, you know, it's therapeutic. It dramatically improves their life and it doesn't really add any risk. You ever done that?
Yes.
Bruce?
But the pendulum has swung so far in the direction of zero opiates, even for chronic pain patients, to hammer everything's a nail, and then no benzos if there's any addiction history. There's just a paper that came out saying, let's look at this more carefully.
Yeah, they've done it. I've been through many cycles of that, the benzos and addicts, though. And listen, I have a patient, I think you know her, just today, you know, she has horrible tardive dyskinesia and anxiety with the tardive dyskinesia, and she gets better when she drinks or when she's on benzos, and a well-meaning neurologist wanted to put her on benzos, and she was like, yes.
Yeah,
I went, no, do not. Mm-hmm. Within 12 hours, full relapse.
Right.
Yeah.
Full
relapse.
Well, the thing is with the understanding of benzos is that if you are an addict, benzos don't really work for you. As prescribed.
10 or 12 of them do.
Exactly. So that's the problem is that when you are an addict, they don't work in recommended doses.
Yeah.
So
good point.
You have all of the problems. You have the withdrawal symptoms that are rebound anxiety. You have panic attacks. You're having to take more. You're doctor shopping. Now it puts you in.
I see a lot of these millennial boys addicted to benzos.
Really interesting.
Zannies and... Zannies and heroin.
That's what little
is,
peep.
Yeah.
That's a little
deadly
peep.
But
combo.
That's so deadly.
Deadly combo.
Deadly.
Jesus. But we've skipped over a topic that you percolated up with here a minute ago, which I think is important, is that I think we have a gigantic population of opiate-dependent, non-addicted
patients.
That's
what I think. Yeah. I think just because they're physically addicted.
And you can't tell. It's hard to tell who they are when they're in their thing.
You can when you ask their family history.
Yep, yep.
I've met these people's parents. Now, I know they've been to 10 rehabs.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're drug addicts in the way that Shelley and I are drug addicts.
That's right.
And
I
they're
agree.
Being treated like Shelley and I drug addicts.
Let's take
and
a quick break.
Okay.
We'll talk about what that difference is when we get back. We're so pleased to welcome Hydrolyte back to the program. Hydrolyte is not only a product that I can safely recommend to you. It is something that I use, and Susan, my first lady of love, our producer, uses just about every day. And it is simply the best oral rehydration product I've ever tried, that I've ever seen. I wish I'd invented it myself, and there are many reasons you should keep some around. This is the time of year it is impossible to avoid getting sick, cold, flu, stomach bugs, and I think everyone knows we're in the middle of a big influenza season. They can knock you out, but staying hydrated, particularly if you get sick, is very important. Even if you manage to avoid these pathogens, your schedule is half as busy as mine. Getting in your 8 glasses of water a day isn't just going to happen. And if you're working out regularly, you definitely run the risk of getting a little dehydrated, and this keeps your volume up. The beauty of Hydrolyte, whether you're sick or not, you can absolutely benefit from the proper balance of sodium, glucose, and water. Hydrolyte does this better than sports drinks or water alone. I know you're used to using sports drinks. This is better. I'm telling you, as a physician, I can vouch for that. Hydrolyte comes in flavors like orange, berry, and lemonade, available in a premixed drink, a powder, or what I like, the effervescent tablet. You can simply drop in a bottle of water, and then you've got it. Compared to sports drinks, Hydrolyte delivers up to 4 times the electrolyte with 75% less sugar. Hydrolyte solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. You can find Hydrolyte at Rite Aid or online at Amazon. Also, for a limited time, our listeners can save 30% on Hydrolyte. Just click the banner on our website, drdrew.com. Use the code DRDREW18. That's DrDrew18 at checkout. And you will save 30% on Hydrolyte, and it's silly not to do it. That's DrDrew18. Hey, we're back, and we're talking about the difference between a non... This may seem confusing to people, but some people get strung out on a drug, look like an addict, behave
because
like an addict.
Because if you need money, you're going to look like a drug addict
for a little while. But if
Bob, you do have a lot of behaviors.
Yeah.
But
if you stop using and you're not a drug addict, you stay stopped.
I think sending them to AA makes them encouraged to use more.
Or use something else.
To be involved with the other... To take
That's
a
such
non-
a projection on your part, Bobby. Oh, my gosh. Some people go to a meeting and they go, this really isn't for me, and they walk away, Bob.
I know, but the kids were forcing to go because they're in treatment.
Well, I don't force anybody to do anything they don't want to do. One thing I know about addicts, do not try to force them to do anything.
I will tell you something, and by the way, the data on the 12-step outcomes in terms of sustained abstinence, again, it's as good as any professional intervention, as good as or better than any professional intervention, unless... they're forced to go.
Right.
Then it does less well.
Okay,
if the court sends them, they do poorly.
Give me some advice right now, Shelley, because I'm in the process of trying to copy you and Paul and going to go create an in-network. Our Silver Lake thing's going to be in-network, right?
Okay.
And we're having a meeting last week about it, right? And it was about 12 steps. And I said, they get in the fucking van and go to the meeting, so they get the fuck out. Mm-hmm. It's the old Buddy Arnold came out of me.
Right? I can still go that way.
And to hear that you're running an in-network place and you're still being cool to them, why are you doing that?
Because it doesn't work, and because I like longevity in my own sanity. Okay,
Drew, you like my approach, right?
I do.
I mean, I'm not.
I know. I understand. I understand.
It doesn't do me any good.
You fight the fights you can't fight.
But sometimes
when you have a contained environment, you can. You're talking about a more residential setting. Right?
Yeah. Sober living without patients.
Yeah. I mean,
they
that's
get
a,
everything.
You have a little more control then. Don't just get in the van.
Nobody thinks that. I mean. I think it works 100% of the time when you want it to work 100% of the time,
right.
And you do it.
That's right.
If that's not the case, is it going to work?
That's fine when we have 558,000 drug addicts. When we have 20 million, it's a bummer.
Beware, our profession, Bruce, every time we've gotten into an opiate crisis, we've sort of gone, well, let's just make sure get no new ones, and they let the old ones die.
Right.
And I don't think we should do that this time.
What do you think of marijuana replacement?
I'd prefer it.
What do you mean marijuana replacement?
There's a lot of kids, I don't know.
Oh, for opiates to marijuana.
Yeah, this kind of medically managed marijuana as a replacement for opiate addiction. In a
well, what do you mean medically managed? What do you mean by that?
There's a place called High Sobriety
here in Los
Angeles.
Yeah.
I mean, there's...
Have you heard of it?
Of course, I've heard of that. I've also heard of 420-friendly...
interesting.
420-friendly treatment centers, 420
The only problem with that is we don't have enough data to really know what we're doing.
No,
there.
We don't know. We have no idea what
in principle, biologically, in principle, I'd prefer it, and I don't object to it. I just can't recommend it because I don't have the data to be able to know
what
that is.
And that's exactly the take that I have on it. I said, listen, you guys don't want to take your psychotropics. You don't want to take this.
We have friends that have done it.
I do not rail against it at all.
What do you think of our two friends that were heroin addicts with us that don't go to AA, aren't sober, and been smoking weed for 25 years? What do you think of them? I think they're doing all right.
Great. If that's the kind of lifestyle they would like to lead.
Do you know the two people I'm talking about?
No, I do not.
But I will tell you, Bob.
They're musicians.
I know.
And so, shocking.
So here's what I know.
I can't function on weed. So I don't. Whatever is good for other people, I can't stand weed.
They can't function. They can't function either.
It distorts my motivations.
Right.
And I don't want to be part of
that. They can't function either. They're just rich. And so they don't have to worry
about
it. So great.
Oh, come
on.
That's why they don't have to.
Go eat at noon.
And they also don't have kids that they're primarily responsible for. They have kids, but they're kids.
Yeah, they're not primary. That was a nice way of putting it, primary responsible for.
And they're rich, and so they whatever, and they're not relapsing. So, okay.
That's just not my lifestyle, you know?
That's not a thriving. That's not what
you're thinking Willie Nelson. That's a third person, Willie Nelson, too.
I'm not thinking of Willie Nelson. I know who you're talking about.
Bob is pulling a page out of Willie Nelson's playbook.
And here's the deal. I'm interested. No disrespect for anybody that wants to do things differently, and I'm not telling people how to live their life, but I'm interested in helping people thrive. I'm interested in
which is always the goal that I have for my guys over.
I don't
over
think your friends are thriving.
Is like I would like to see them.
No. I think they're getting
meet
along.
Their potential.
Yeah, to thrive, to flourish. I'm interested in that, and it doesn't interest me to.
And
to
I'm also interested
put somebody to pasture.
in people. Like I'm interested in what makes this whole community better, not just the individual. And the whole community, like I stay sober and clean a lot for myself, but a lot for others.
Well, this is my other point. Now, you bring that up. And you stay sober for others, and it helps you thrive and flourish,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And this is the thing about 12-step that nobody seems to get.
It's citizenry responsibility.
It's what humans...
It's what makes me happiest
absolutely.
When I'm able to do that.
And all the therapy, all the research out there on what happiness is and happiness mm-hmm. works, it always harkens back to the stuff Shelley's talking about here. And here's the reality: there isn't enough dollars in the national debt and the national budget to pay for, and there aren't enough professionals to pay them sufficiently to sit on addicts the way they need to be sat on to get well.
And,
but people
and
in recovery,
and guided, and mentored, and loved,
there
and
is
having
not, it
compassion.
Doesn't there's not enough of it. And by the way, the motivation, if you're paying people, is a little different than what Shelley's talking about. But there are armies of people like Shelley that will sit on somebody who's struggling, will stay with them, and spend God knows, you know, of a God knows number of hours, of a God knows hours,
and that's
in there.
The fulfillment.
And it's your fulfillment
it
as well
is
as
my fulfillment,
and it's free,
and
right?
It's, but I think, and it's such, it's so, it has brought me along to as a human being in ways that I don't think weed or benzos or booze.
Before you go, may I just say,
I just don't think it exists in
that
way.
What she's talking about is why I'm interested in this field. Right. Otherwise, I'm not very interested. I'm never interested in Suboxone and pod maintenance stuff. People could have – well,
sure.
go.
Sure.
I'm interested in what she's talking about.
I am
real
too.
Thriving.
What I was going to say, though, the value of a treatment program, I think, is introducing people to a 12-step. Now, when you say if you force somebody to go to 12-step like DUI classes, mm-hmm. it's not going to work. And what I find I'm doing a lot of time – I had a patient yesterday, and she's a CE – she's works for a Fortune 500 company, and she said, I need help understanding what this is going to be. Mm-hmm. And if she didn't have a treatment program where there was myself and the therapist we have, if you just sent her to a meeting, she would have just rejected it.
Well, but enrolling in 12-step, it should be part of your
right.
professional responsibility.
Right.
Getting people enrolled in that and understanding it and coaching them up, that's
right.
great.
Because a four-week program, an eight-week program, unless you give them, it's like teaching the person how to fish mm-hmm. rather than giving them a fish
that's
or whatever.
Right.
So, but not, I don't know that all programs do that. And there's no continuity or consistency.
I'm just saying the fact that 12-step or mutual aid societies have been condemned and vilified and stuff is mm-hmm. anathema. It's insane.
They're being let's be clear who
when
they're being condemned by.
Free services can
they're
be rendered
being,
to the American
they're
public.
They're being condemned
right.
because they're seen as a
religion.
As in the way, well, yeah, religion. But that's in a personal level. But I think this institutional attack, Drew, that's gone on
yep.
is because the big pharma, Suboxone company from England, sees it as an obstacle, as an either or. I don't see it as an either or, and that's not how you're, Bruce, seeing
no.
it. But I think they're a little naive about what America is.
Yeah, but the company's not doing it. The government is.
Well, they're the ones subsidizing it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a new thing. You'll love this, Bruce. So in this... figuring out that there's 20 million opiate addicts. I said most of them live in poverty, mm-hmm. right? When you look at the Rust Belt, mm-hmm. that's where a huge amount of the opiate epidemic
yeah.
is. So most of them are Medicaid people, right?
Oh,
even if Medicaid were willing to pay $500 a month for them to be on Suboxone, that's $2 billion That's $2 billion a month.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah.
That's a lot of dough.
It's insane. As opposed to, let's send them somebody who can enroll them in 12 step for free.
And so much more fulfilling because...
But I think the government's looking at it as a cost reduction.
But one of the aspects of addiction that we get caught up in discussing is the drug, the brain, the biology, that aspect. But there's a whole level of chronic emptiness that needs to be fulfilled, not with a Suboxone strip, but with people with like-minded and common positive regard for addicts.
Is this
compassion.
A new
passion?
Is this a new orientation you have, or have you always had this and it's become
no,
more?
No, I have always I had this, but it's more clear to me
now. That's
what
it sounds like. Yeah,
yeah, it's much
more
clear to me.
Because our society is broken. I don't think there's anybody that says, this society is awesome, right?
So
something broke. Now, my personal life is awesome,
yeah,
but I get sad when I look at the divisiveness, the lack of opportunity, all the BS that goes on.
Yeah.
And I think we have a whole generation of kids who live in that.
Yeah, yeah. They're sensitive. They're
and
absorbing
they're
it.
So mm-hmm. absorbing yeah. it. Right. Mm-hmm. And so when I say anything's possible, dude, you could go to Costa Rica right now.
Mm-hmm. They don't.
Mm-hmm. It does inspire the rant. Here's what I think. It inspires the drug addicts out of the milieu of the thousands of people I see.
And
they get
excited.
And they get excited because they click with that emptiness that she's talking about. If you've had it your whole life, if it's not just a learned environmental social media acclimated thing, but it's a true emptiness that AA describes, when somebody comes along and talks positively about what their life was like, what happened, and what their life is like now – the real addicts will go, fuck yeah, I
want
to follow
him. I want
him.
That. Yeah. Whatever that is, I want to do that.
Yeah.
And which is what inspired me because of that level of chronic emptiness that needed to be fulfilled. But I also needed to get honest about it. And I don't know that there's a lot of places in America where you can get honest about how you really are experiencing yourself and your place in the world.
She's talking about political correctness on a certain.
No, level. No, she's singing a song that I've been.
No, but let's get.
But the beauty,
I've been humming for quite some
the
time.
The beauty of it is that I every day have the opportunity to interface with people from all over the country, and for me to model positive regard for myself and for them, and to have the compassion and have the beauty and the joy and really love them through that. That is what I've gained from being in all of these 12-step thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of meetings.
Does it take having to recover from a substance to get to that point? Because what I notice, the kids coming up now, there's digital immediate gratification.
Sure.
There's an acceptance of cannabis and alcohol that I've never seen before.
Right.
It's a baseline acceptance, and this creates a huge number of people that wouldn't have been exposed that are going to become addicted. But how do you get to the when
how
they're younger, when the adolescent population.
We
such
need
that
hope and optimism in our society, and we need a leader to rise up and start not BSing like Obama did about hope, but actually bringing hope and the compromise to our society. The way that we've been used the last 15 years in this divisive nature has destroyed a whole generation of kids.
Mm. And it's going to take many years, I think, to really overcome what these despondent folks come in with no hope and with a lot of lies and misinformation about themselves and about their place in the world and their hopelessness.
Give me an example of that.
The level of looking up to people with money, property, prestige,
fame
and fortune,
and feeling
so
inadequate
and empty and envious, and thinking, what's the point of trying? And then I come in and I'm like, here's the point of trying. You have no idea what you can manage. You have no idea what you can do. We need to get you over here. We need to take your head. We need to reprogram it.
Don't you wish you were in her treatment center? She is the best.
We just wish we could reprogram it. And then we can take a look. Let's take a look at this.
You could use a couple hours, Shelly, maybe.
Yeah. So. I mean, that's what – no, but that's what I do. I did a group on Tuesday. I asked a young girl, like, she was wanting to hurt herself, and she's unhappy and whatever. And I said, well, what do you want to do with your life? What do you dream of? What do you
– I don't know. What do you want to do?
She didn't.
We've
parented – millions of millennials, us baby boomers are responsible, and the Gen Xers are responsible.
Wait, I am not a baby boomer.
You're a Gen Xer.
Let's get serious.
Gen Xers.
Bob and I, we're three of us are baby boomers.
Baby boomers.
All right, you guys have raised millions.
We parented. It was under our watch that this hopelessness came on a generation of kids, and we're responsible for it. That's my feeling.
No, there's no doubt about it.
So I'm looking for a leader. I don't know who it is. They're coming, though, Bruce. They're coming.
Yeah, I'm waiting, too.
What qualities, Bob, should that person have? What are you looking for?
Honesty, compassion.
Yeah, but anybody that's vulnerable and open is going to get destroyed today. The guillotines are out, man.
Which is definitely a factor. However, I do feel like in numbers.
The Committee of Public Safety is out. The Committee of Un-American Activity is out. It's in the internet.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers of what? I'm sorry, Shelley.
I feel like when we all stand, you know, together in a position from a place of compassion and empathy, truly, there is no bounds to that. We can overcome anything. And I don't think it matters. It's just a place to come from where people can't dig in and they can't undermine it.
But I don't disagree with you at all. I'm just trying to think how a leader does that.
The mechanism for
it's
that.
It's a movement.
Because I don't think it's one person.
But it's a movement.
Well, I love that.
But one person represents a movement. Trump represents something. It's an anger and a frustration.
Right. He's a wrecking ball. He's a murder weapon.
He's something.
Shouldn't the pendulum swing to the other side where there's a representative of this centrist idea?
Yes.
I think it's John Kasich myself. I would vote for him for president. He's a Republican. I've never voted for a Republican in my life, Bruce, just so you know.
Do you even know any Republicans?
I know John Kasich. Okay. I would vote for him.
But I don't think you're – that's a what I sort of – it's a
centrist
ideas.
That's
a politician. I'm not sure that's the kind of leader you look for.
No, centrist ideas, commonsensical ideas, that it's crazy the guillotines, that it's crazy that I have a bigger nuclear button than you, that some centrist sanity be a movement. You don't think so?
No, I agree with that. I'm thinking
it's kind of boring.
Right.
No, I think it's fair. I think people, well, you know, it's so much projection of what's going on with us internally and this projection on all of our societies.
Yes.
We have to really move into what am I doing? Stop focusing on what everybody else is doing and how they're not doing this or doing that. Focus on what I'm doing.
Okay, let me.
How
let me
am
just say,
I coming I through?
I completely agree with you, but.
But the problem is that when we agree all the time, we don't get to get together very often. Because it's boring.
But here's my problem. I in that book I wrote on narcissism, I predicted that there would be a pre-French Revolutionary style. Public Safety Committee. I knew the guillotines were going to come. I knew it was coming. Mm-hmm. Because that's what narcissists do when they get together. They form a mob and they find a sacrificial thing. Mm-hmm. They scapegoat and they take all their aggression.
What happens after that?
Right. Post.
A big leader emerges. A leader usually emerges.
That's what I'm saying.
And the fear, the concern is that leader can be someone, you know, that's where Napoleon came in, whatever. Or it could be something good. And the question is, if it's something good, it's got to be kind of exciting and gratifying and all the things that narcissists like, because they're still narcissists.
Sure.
And you have to convert all that energy into a – like you're exactly the direction you're talking about, but it has to come through some sort of leadership. And I don't know what that would look like yet. I just don't know.
Well, I've noticed in because I've become a program director, and I didn't have experience with leading, and I didn't really know what I was doing. And I sat back and I waited to see how the leadership was going to unfold and develop. And what I noticed is that the less that I try to have my hands in everything, and the less I try to do with the staff, the more they rise to the occasion or dismiss themselves.
Or get out.
I don't have to do anything. I just have to model and support And either the folks come up to the level, like they were super grateful that you came to speak to us, and things do change. Just 1 2-hour talk can inspire a year's worth of clinicians, well, that, you know, to do something.
Inspiration and is another thing. Inspiration. So what I try to do with the with that drug addict population that rises out of the population I'm working with is try to inspire them. Like, you've always had a place to live. When I got sober, I didn't even have a place to live. I didn't even have any front teeth. When you start talking to them like that,
that's true.
Which is basically the AA way,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're shocked. They're used to being talked to by medical professionals and clinicians and how are you feeling today. But when you share with them, like, dude, anything's possible. Look at my – you could have a really interesting, good, fulfilling life.
Yeah.
If you just stop taking heroin. I don't even want to talk about heroin anymore. You know what I mean?
Well, now it's so significant that you say that, because I bring everybody in my office that comes through the door, for the most part, to see if they're in the right place, they have the appropriate sort of abilities to function within the milieu.
Because there's a lot of freedom and responsibility there.
So I want to make sure they're in the right place. I bring them in, and I, a lot of times, will counsel them, just as a program director, will counsel them right on the spot, just like that, get them engaged. Can I engage you? Are we interested? Are we interested in this thing? Are you interested in your life? Are you interested in your life?
You know what they're thinking is, are you an interesting enough object for me to get engaged? You have to be an interesting object.
No, you have to use yourself. Yeah. You have to use yourself.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Right.
Absolutely. And this is the same thing we're talking about here right now.
Fortunately for me, I'm just quirky enough, and I'm just weird enough, and I'm just funny enough to get most of their sort of attention.
Can you teach other people to do that? Because what you're saying
problem.
Is very unique.
That's the thing that's hard.
And is it different now than it was 20 years ago? Is there more narcissism in the cult in culture,
yes.
such that approaching people therapeutically is different than it was?
Yes.
It
yes
is
and
different.
Yes. Yes
it
and
is
yes.
Different.
But the three of us have been doing what we've been doing forever.
No, but I determined I put something in a more modern context at ALO where I work, is that I told the staff time and time again, I supervise it, that just treat every patient with respect and dignity, right? That's something that you taught me at Los Encinas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whereas a lot of
they're
treatment
sick.
Professionals
they're
where
sick.
I come from, you don't
tear
treat
them
with
first.
Dignity
yeah, yeah,
and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And that seems to work. And I had a simple rule, just be cool. Be cool to your peers. Be cool to the clients. And that kind of works in a general way. You certainly have to tinker with it. And I've seen people that worked at CryHelp for 10 years adopt this new way of treating because they see it be more effective.
It
yeah,
is
sure.
definitely more effective.
And again, narcissism.
But I still think they need to get in the fucking van.
Okay. sure. And then I was talking to somebody who I guess I tried to talk to out of somebody out of leaving Los Encinas when he was 18 years old. I don't know.
Yeah.
This was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
But I was talking to him on the phone, and he has like 7 years or something, and he's like in a treatment program working and
great.
Running things.
Awesome.
And he was 18 at the time, and I said, he said, you tried to talk me out of leaving AMA. And I said, well, how'd I do? Like, did I do well? He's like, no, you did really well, but I wasn't trying to hear it at 18.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, well, I'm glad that I had that opportunity, because now you're making a difference in our lives and in our culture and in our city, and you're trying to do this thing. And maybe it didn't work when you were 18, but shortly after that, you know, you were able to benefit, you know, from the program and benefit from, you know, being sober and clean. And he said, yeah. And I said, you know, that great interaction, you're still remembering how that interaction was. And that person at the time didn't really care about that interaction. But now reflection and reflecting back on that interaction, he had enough interest to bring it up to me when I called him on the phone. Right. And then yesterday I had this guy call me to ask about treatments for Medicare. And I'm like a walking encyclopedia of, like, you know, programs for that. I'm like, okay, Redgate, Rena B, Tarzana treatment, call American Hospital, this, that. And so he said, oh, so you remember me? And I said, yeah. I said, you know, I remember people by their symptoms, which I don't know if you guys are experiencing this, but the people I see, I'm like, oh yeah, you were the guy with the esophageal, you know, and I'm like, oh, you were, you're the person who got the really bad infection in your arm. Like,
yeah. Well, sure, that's
like, and I don't know what this means.
That's clinical stuff.
But I was cracking up because I'm literally like remembering these people. And he sent me this, this sobriety clock, you know, and he has over 3 years. And I said, wow, you have well over 1,000 days. And he said, I hope you like remember that, like, it was really important. And I said, you know, please keep me updated on your sobriety, because that's what makes my job doable one more day.
Yep, right. That's exactly right.
Absolutely. And I'm like, that's what I need.
Yeah, I'm the same
to
way.
To keep going.
It's exact same way.
Is like, oh, you aren't dying.
You're benefiting. Yeah.
You're not dying today of esophageal bleed.
Let me take this conversation a slightly different direction. Is it that addicts are always sort of the most sensitive population to what's going on in our world, whatever society they happen to be living in. And now they're reflecting something about American society. And the thing, the emptiness you're talking about has always been, in addition to it being an interpersonal emptiness and a lack of trust and a lack of filling with other people, a lack of attunement for other people, a lack of development of the emotional landscape and all the stuff we talk about. But there's another piece that I think might help in the leadership part. I don't know. But it's a part that I understand least about recovery, which is the spiritual vacuum, the spiritual emptiness. Mm-hmm. If you really looked at this country and understood it as a gigantic spiritual vacuum right mm-hmm. now, that would kind of make sense the way those kinds of issues have expressed themselves through addict patients. They have helped me understand what that is. Mm-hmm. I have trouble articulating what it is. I don't really fully get it.
It's that thing that, to me, it's that thing that Shelley was talking about, this
the
community.
Emptiness.
This meaning of my life through my interaction and part of humanity.
That's right.
That is spirituality to me.
And I agree with you. And understand that now, even when we get into political dialogue, we can't even say to somebody who disagrees with us, well, can't we as a human understand together? No, we can't.
Right.
We can't even – we can't have a shared humanity even, because you're not human if you don't agree with me. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. to me, that's the deepest –
dehumanizing.
The deepest example of the spiritual vacuum that we are in.
And, the deadness.
And so, yes. And so when I look at leaders, I mean, where do people with spiritual maladies go? They go to like Tony Robbins. They go to like
– I know. It's so weird. I have a client that goes to Tony Robbins. I'm like, dude, what are you fucking thinking?
Right. That's the opposite.
They must have a lot of money.
But that's the opposite of what they need. If I had to say the converse of what I'm looking for in a leadership, I'd go, well, that guy is the opposite of what I think.
I don't want egos leading me.
But they,
I'm
but
tired
he,
of egos.
Rah rahs. I studied it because my friend got into it.
It's arousal.
Rah rah. It's
arousal.
Cheerleads
right.
you. Yeah,
it's arousal.
Everything. You're going to walk through the raindrops.
Yeah, you
just
are
because you
walk
met
on,
me.
Walk on coals.
How about
but again,
we?
Again, it's that
we.
Arrogance and that ego.
Yeah.
It's like who I am. Just I'm nothing without you.
It's. Okay.
Okay. Well, but the thing start where you look for leaders. Let's all start thinking.
Like,
and I'm not saying religious. I'm just saying
spiritual. No, spiritual. Yeah. People who have a strength and a calmness and a passion for the common good of our whole.
Everybody. That's right.
And, that's what we need.
But they have to be interesting enough. Here's the way you're interesting enough to these people to keep a group.
There's an interesting thing going on, Drew. The people that have dedicated their lives to this being a part of this community, are getting out. They're leaving the United States. A friend of mine, she's been one of the most greatest benevolent helpers of the city of Los Angeles, underprivileged people, and she's just like, I can't do it anymore. I'm 60 years old. I can't do it anymore.
I get that.
And
well,
that,
we only
but
have
the
so
exhaustion
much
of that. No, more of us need to be doing it.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I would always agree that I can do more.
Facebook Live has some questions for us. Go ahead.
There you go,
producer Susan.
What is it?
Please give me your opinion on Meng Da. I'm thinking it must be horrible, even though you can buy it in a store.
Never heard of it.
M A E N G. And then D-A.
Is it Kratom?
Kratom.
Is it another name for it?
I don't know what that is.
So Kratom? It's a brand.
No, I don't know what this
it's a
is.
Brand name.
I think it's a brand of Kratom.
A brand of Kratom.
Oh, okay, well, it's opiate. Any opiate is an opiate.
It's not really an opiate.
It's a weak opiate.
It's from the coffee plant. It's a mu agonist, and it also
has
caffeine-like.
Opiate agonist. Right. That's it.
But they're so using weak. It.
They don't use it in that way, though.
Yeah. I had a patient.
In a weird way.
$15,000 a month.
Full thing.
There's a sexual component to it, too.
It's just open.
With kratom.
It's like a speedball.
So you can get addicted to it.
Oh, yeah,
definitely. And they're using it to get over and around.
It's from the coffee plant.
Yeah.
So you get the stimulant effect and a mu agonist. Yeah.
I think I need some. Okay.
So stay away. Stay away from it. No.
What is your thought on...
Order some for Susan.
Jesus.
What is your thoughts on...
That's all I need.
Ibogaine as treatments for those who qualify medically?
I met a guy the other day that did it, and he had that amazing experience you're supposed to have.
How long did it last?
He did it like 7 months ago.
Okay, he'll be.
I met him a week ago.
He will relapse within the next month. That's the time course I see.
How long does it last?
What's Ibogaine?
Six to eight months. It's a very powerful hallucinogenic that gives. It does. Sort
but
of,
guess what he said? An interesting thing. He always hated AA before the experience.
Now he doesn't
mind AA.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, I think it may have reset some of the what is the
personality?
The dopamine? It's the amygdala.
We really don't know how it works.
Seems to
honestly.
Have affected his personality.
There's some amygdala.
There is
sort
something.
Of
yeah, there is. It
aspect.
Does affect their personality.
That's what scares the shit out of me.
Right.
Yeah, because you don't know what it's going to do.
Right. Because you're making.
It can make Ted Bundy too.
It's not measurable.
It made him like AA better.
Well, that's what he reported to me. And that is something
right.
that people do report after these hallucinogenic experiences. They feel more communal and more connected to things.
But here's
what we're saying is that their personality may be permanently changed, meaning their brain is permanently changed. And we're putting a value judgment on that, saying, "Well, they're better now," and then letting it go. Like I don't think we should be changing people's personality with a chemical.
No, I think that is
scary.
No, I do think that it is extremely unregulating as well.
Yeah.
It can go either way. You took.
I'm telling you, I met one guy this week. It was the weirdest thing.
I've seen people stay sober 8 months.
I've had people make some progress.
Yeah.
I've had people pay the $10,000 to $20,000. What I tell them, you know, I don't argue whether or not it changed their vision of the world, but I say you're not going to maintain that unless you do the 12. If you're an addict, unless you do the 12 steps.
But what? They're doing it here in LA.
They're doing it everywhere.
All over.
Dave Navarro is a big fan of that, right?
Oh, right.
No. Navarro's doing a different thing.
Okay. This microdosing LSD, we had the guest on.
We had that on.
Oh, yes. I have my microdosing LSD. I have my using research chemicals and microdoses to engage their intellectual curiosity.
Friends doing that or clients?
No. Clients. Peoples. I don't have any friends.
Peoples.
Come on.
Okay, here's a question.
I sound like Michelangelo's.
Do you have to have a family history to be an addict?
Yes. It doesn't have to, it may be subtle.
Oh, wait.
I would say
to be physically addicted, you don't.
Right.
To be an addict, you do.
I hope we made that distinction.
Well, this one says, I don't know, have any active addicts in my family for generations, but I am absolutely an addict.
But you have to look at addiction from
religion.
A broader perspective.
Religion is how
it's
it came through Shelley.
It's just drugs.
Yeah.
Religion.
No. Booze. I'm Irish.
Your mom.
But that wasn't even. That's,
if you're Irish,
that's
Scottish,
extremely limited. I'm Irish, Scottish,
North American,
Welsh.
Indian,
I mean,
Welsh.
Parents weren't alcoholics because they didn't drink out of a brown paper bag, I always say, well, are they overly religious? And they always are.
No, I have many, many actual addicts, like
full
cigarettes,
addicts. Yeah.
Alcohol, speed,
everything.
Many,
teetotaling,
many.
Rigid family structure has the same risk of an alcoholic parent in terms of the offspring becoming alcoholic.
That used to be interpreted as overly religious because it was based on
rigidity.
Well, the point is, you need somebody like us that knows how to interpret the family history to see the signs of the gene.
Because there's definitely more to addiction than just substances.
Here's hope. Here's hope, though. Now that 1 in 16 Americans are drug addicts and labeled that by everybody, we won't have this question 25 years from now.
But why?
Because everyone will go, my grandpa was an opiate addict.
Everybody will have a history.
Oh, that's funny.
But I think in a lot of ways, anxiety being the underpinning of why we behave in ways that create rigidity, that compensates for the anxiety and bringing that anxiety down. I think that has a proponent in a family
lack of
history.
Control, though?
Yeah, definitely.
Feeling control.
Feeling out of control or just having a basis anxiety. Maybe it's from trauma. Maybe it's from family history. Maybe it's
and,
a central nervous system
And the
aspect.
Way addicts experience anxiety is very different than not addicts.
Is what, it? We,
addicts, anxiety connects to depression.
And it's never going to go
and
away.
And for somebody like me, anxiety is the opposite of depression. It almost goes towards
men. What if you start drinking at the age of 9 and doing drugs at 13?
Yeah,
that's a drug addict.
Well, but she says she doesn't have addiction.
Well, that's a
she does. We can find it.
That's what we have to find.
Ask her what her family.
That was the rest of her question.
Yeah, ask her where her heritage is.
Family mapping.
She was adopted.
If you're American Indian or
Irish, Scottish.
Scottish, big loads.
Chuck's got big burdens.
Hey, let's get back to the anxiety control issue. I got two doctors here I want to ask you. I asked Shelly in the hall.
Gabapentin.
Sydney did her spoke her first words the other day.
Yeah.
Right? It was no, not that.
Well, that's
but is that a bad sign,
no,
Dr.
No,
Drew?
No.
I was nervous as hell.
No. You're anxious.
No, not that.
No.
Why would a kid not be the first words they fucking say?
Because that's what you say all the time.
Yeah.
I had triplets, I know. What? Paulina said, damn it.
Okay, so I'm safe. It's not a control issue, anxiety.
Well, you're not safe. However, there is nothing to really worry about currently.
Yes.
Bruce, you didn't chime in. Is that a bad sign? No,
not at all.
You've
given too many choices in the environment.
You're overanalyzing
it. Not
it.
That one. That's just what
there's. Okay. Miss Producer, are you standing up because it's time for us to wrap up?
I hate to do that.
Oh, Shelly, I love you.
We're going to come up with we need to find somebody.
Shelly needs her own show.
Yeah, I'm in for that.
Let's do it.
You should, right? Okay. You want to do it?
We're going to call it Addiction A-Team.
Okay.
That's it.
Well, let's think about it. Was that your idea?
No, that was Val's idea.
Val?
But let's think about it. Let's think about maybe in terms of how do you make it interesting enough for people to tune in?
I don't know. Susan, is it interesting?
For a podcast,
I don't know. Facebook is giving a bunch of smiley faces and thumbs up, so I think so.
It's somewhat interesting.
Drew, do another podcast, another project?
Well, listen, you need to come back and do more. I know you probably
Let's just make this life the four of us.
I'm fine with that.
Let's do that.
But yeah, more podding would be good.
We can do it.
I did. Over the break, I started thinking to myself, podcasting has the potential to really be a powerful force because it's the only place in our culture right now that people sit and listen and think and connect. Otherwise, it's just all this arousal stuff in the media.
Yeah, it's slow.
It's
slow.
Podcast is my meditation every day. I listen to Sam Harris. I listen to all kinds of crazy stuff, and I get enriched by it, and it makes me think. And that's what we need more of right now. And so I think podcasting has a real potential.
I would agree that it does have that potential, and I would also agree that maybe going always the way of like the sensationalization of media is maybe part of the reason why meaningful podcasts aren't as popular.
Well, it is because
we might want to start engaging people on a different level.
You're of course correct. However, getting them there is hard, and I understand.
Well, let's work towards getting them there. I'll come up with a treatment plan.
There you go.
There you go.
But the reason virtual that the media treatment. Is the way it is us. They make no mistake
of
about
course.
It. It's a market, and they just respond
of course,
to us.
Of course,
but underneath it is this growing body of people who are starting to think and connect and share.
That's that centrist world I'm talking about,
and it's growing. And I think
let's do more of it.
All right, done.
Let's do more of it.
All right,
help more people.
Until our
next. Thank you so much. I completely adore all of
you. What was the name
of your
your
Bel-Air treatment? Bel-Air Core.
Core is the fanciest place. God, I can't believe it.
It's gorgeous. And then we have our Pride program.
Want to know a story about it? Do you know the story of the building? So my good buddy, Johnny Depp, had offices on Melrose. Paul calls me, her partner, says, come to the new offices. I just rented.
He's my boss.
He's your partner. He was our client. How about
it's
that?
Great.
Now he started this whole huge thing.
Him and Josh.
So I go to the address, and it's Johnny's offices. And I go walking in. I'm like, what happened to Johnny Depp? And he goes, I don't know. He moved out, and I took over. So Johnny Depp's old offices on Melrose, where Pirates of the Caribbean was created, is their rehab.
Yeah, I think it was a post house. Post-production house.
There was parts of it were.
Yeah.
But parts
a lot
of it were Johnny
so you're
Depp's
sort of
area.
Over by, what's the street, the cross street?
Sweetser.
Yeah.
Well, all that area, that's all post heaven there. That's all sound.
Yeah,
and
it was a
post
house.
Yeah,
and so now we have an outpatient there.
There was a smoking area outside, let me tell you, that had nothing to do with post.
You know whose offices are also right there?
Who?
John Irwin.
Right.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Isn't that weird? Well,
miss you guys. Love you guys.
See you next time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Oh, by the way, our friends at Hydrolite. Oh, before I let everybody go, don't forget our friends at Hydrolite. These guys make the best hydration product. You get the same thing as an IV.
Oh, I need that.
Here.
Could I have some?
See, with
so,
a mouth.
I'm
with
so
mouth.
Bad. Thank that you. Stuff it's, saved my life when I had yeah. pneumonia, and yes. then I'm like, gifts. I forgot about it.
Yes. It's, also, if you're sick, if you're drinking too much, whatever it might be, if you're exercising, this has literally three times.
Oh, I'm
it,
exercising.
Yeah, three times or four times, something like that, what no. you get from a yes. sports drink. Four times from a sports drink.
No. Need it for alcohol abuse. So
well,
she
but her patients,
she
patients.
Works out.
Also, remind everyone, check out DrDrew.com. Get all the family of podcasts over there, and so you can see these. And don't forget our Facebook, also, those of you on Facebook Live, I know you know about that. Get the Dr. Drew podcast, the Adam and Drew podcast, This
Listen
Life,
to the
Weekly Infusion. Listen to our podcast. Podcasts are the future, right?
Yeah. I want
to
be on all the podcasts.
You can. There you go. We'll work in.
Also, she loves Howard Stern.
I want to be on
You should be on the Howard Stern
okay.
one.
Okay.
Did you
he
hear me
be
on
a
the
regular
after show?
On This Life. We'll have you back.
Okay.
Also, Catherine and I are going to start a new health and fitness podcast. So
okay.
So it'll be another You Live.
Are you
so,
just going to live here in this
hashtag
room,
you, either here or the other one we do the podcast. Well, yeah, or Corolla's podcast or whatever.
This Life is, it's all-encompassing. It does.
This Life is all-encompassing. Imagine that.
Oh, that's great.
So, and You Live.
Susan.
Hashtag You Live.
You Live in This Life.
If
Thank you,
you
guys.
If you need to find it.
Thank you.
Go DrDrew.com. See you guys.
Remember, you can find all these podcasts at DrDrew.com. The Dr. Drew podcast, the This Life podcast, and the Adam and Drew podcast, which is available 5 days a week. Find them all on iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Subscribe and get it first. And if you're really happy, click on the Amazon banner at drdrew.com to help support the show. We'll thank you for it. If you join the email list via drdrew.com/contact, we'll send you a weekly infusion newsletter with Dr. Drew's news. We're so grateful when you get in touch. We read all your emails and we'll bring you the subject matter you want to hear about.
You Live.